Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So we'll be discussing everything from the release date to whether Lara Croft is relevant in this day and age in this episode. And you'll also get to know more about the India editions of the game. And finally, we'll be talking about the games we've been playing this week. And to do these things, we have our games editor, Rishi Alwani.
Good morning, night, evening, whenever you're listening in.
And friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
It's morning for sure. Yeah. I don't think anyone listens to this in the night. Everyone should be playing God of War in the night. Like
I'm
me.
You mean Boy of War.
Yes.
I'm your host, Pranay Parab, and I'm going to disagree very heavily with Mike because one of the six times that I listen to every episode is during the night.
But are you playing God of War?
What is God of War?
There we go.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So anyway,
Lara Croft 2 is coming out, right?
Oh, you mean Shadow 2? What decade is this?
Pranay has come back from the 80s to warn us about stuff. Anyway, jokes aside, Shadow the Tomb Raider is the third game in the new reboot of the Tomb Raider franchise. Well, it was announced a little earlier in the year. And last week, Square Enix had a massive blowout in terms of what you can expect, in terms of its limited, in terms of its collectors and limited editions, in terms of what you can expect in terms of gameplay, where selected European members of the press got to play the game, but they couldn't take footage, which is surprising. And on top of that, we finally see pricing for the game in its various editions. Right now there's been basically last week, Friday to be precise, was essentially a mad information blowout on everything to do with Shadow of the Tomb Raider. But sadly, none of it included actual gameplay footage, and that's something we might see at E3 2018.
Okay, so what about the release date for this game?
So I think this is out on September 14, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's out worldwide the same day on all platforms on September 14th, and it actually has early access if you pre-order the expensive editions. And there are a few things to note about this particular quote-unquote offer. So, offering earlier access to full games for people who pay more is not new. EA has been doing this for a while. Microsoft is notorious for doing this with their Ultimate Editions on some of their flagship titles like Gears of War 4 Ultimate Edition, which was $99, which had the season pass and the game Forza Horizon 3 and Forza Motorsport 7. Both which have probably the worst monetization or in terms of how much you need to spend to get everything editions ever, also had the same thing where you get the game earlier if you pay for the most expensive edition. Square Enix actually tried this in the past with Deus Ex Mankind Divided, which backfired horribly when they called it augment your pre-order. And if they hit a certain tier of number of pre-orders and stuff like that, they would unlock the game earlier. For now, you just get 48 hours early access to the game if you pre-order if you pre-order any of the higher tier editions at retail or the some of the editions digitally. It's a little weird that they've announced basically almost Ubisoft tier number of physical editions and digital editions, announcing a lot of season passes, a lot of DLC, but they haven't actually shown proper gameplay. There are some rumors and some discussions and murmurs that the actual gameplay will be revealed at the Microsoft E3 conference with a marketing deal for Microsoft because if you aren't aware, Rise of the Tomb Raider had quite the history when it was announced as a quote-unquote exclusive for Xbox One, which then turned out to be exclusive to Xbox One and Windows 10 the same day, which then released 2 or 3 months later on PC and a year later on PS4. And basically Rise of the Tomb Raider's discussion is poisoned because of that. We need to see what happens with this one. I honestly, just seeing the editions, I don't think they have the clout to pull this off. They aren't Ubisoft.
Yeah, now just to dial back a bit for those of you who are unaware why Mike's making the Ubisoft references. Ubisoft is known for having multiple editions of the same game. So much so that with the first Watch Dogs, you needed a spreadsheet to find out which retailer had which exclusive, to find out which digital storefront had which exclusive. That they basically hived off a lot of cosmetic items, a lot of content, and divided it across multiple retailers. So if you're the sort who wanted to buy the game with everything, chances are you probably ended up with more than one copy of the game. And Square, and this isn't even the first time Square Enix has tried the, hey, you need an Excel sheet approach to buying a game. They did this with everyone's favorite boy band simulator, Final Fantasy 15, where at launch, yeah, there were multiple SKUs. There's a standard, limited, there was even editions if you bought from Amazon or another place that gave you that let you unlock stuff in the game, which made certain early quests a lot easier.
In fact, it gave you a 50% off coupon for all staying at inns, which basically let you double and triple your XP much less than in the standard game, which basically lets you break the difficulty completely early on.
Exactly. But then now let's actually get into the additions for Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Now, before Mike decides to blow your mind with the number of physical SKUs, let's just talk about the digital ones first. So, as you know, there's a standard edition of Shadow of the Tomb Raider that needs no explanation. Allegedly, that contains the full game. Now, in this day and age with microtransactions and season passes, the verdict's yet to go to be out whether this is indeed the full game or access to the shell of a game. Then there is the Shadow of the Tomb Raider Croft Edition, which includes the Shadow of the Tomb Raider season pass, includes the game, and includes early access. And then there's the Shadow of the Tomb Raider Digital Deluxe Edition, that includes basically early access and gives you skill booster packs. And essentially, you get, with either edition, you basically get a whole bunch of cosmetic items and content. There isn't any tangible reason to pick up either unless you want to play it earlier. That's essentially what we have on these editions. What's funny is that if you're looking to buy them... What's funny is that if you're looking to buy them on PC, be prepared for a world of hurt. Shadow of the Tomb Raider on PC starts at ₹3,499. That's for the standard edition.
That's 3.5 times more than what Rise of the Tomb Raider cost at launch.
And probably like 3.5 times more than what you pay. No, close to, I think, four times more than what you paid for the original for 2013's Tomb Raider when that hit PC at ₹699 back. All right,
so tell me, like, how was the previous game? I didn't play it, Rise of the Tomb Raider.
It was really good. Yeah. I mean, barring some late game stumbling in terms of plot, it was pretty good. It ended up with a 7 on 10 in our initial review for two simple reasons. One, yeah, the end game ended up being very, you know, contrite and kind of like screwed up the pacing of the rest of the game. So it was very well paced for the 80%. Remaining 20% seemed a little too convenient and a little too rushed. The second reason why we actually gave it a 7 back in the day was you cannot charge ₹4,699 for an Xbox exclusive in India. And that was the situation at the time. Looking back at it, if they had the pricing right, the game would have been an easy 8, a very solid recommendation to most people. But because of the pricing screw-ups and the late-game pacing, yeah, it ended up with a 7. But yeah, if you're playing it on PC, it's a definite 8, simply because, yeah, it's a lot cheaper and surprisingly well-optimized. I can say the same for the PS4 version as well, which released a year later. But came with everything, no problems in terms of content. You got all the expansions, all the access. And that's kind of crucial because with Rise of the Tomb Raider, while the game in its entirety was complete, the DLCs such as Baba Yaga and the ones that took place in Lara's Manor did a fair bit to explain her motives and explain the character a lot better. So, yeah, I mean, those two versions, to me, were better value for money for most people. So, yeah, I mean, on the whole, that's something to keep in mind. It's a pretty good game, particularly in terms of gameplay and mechanics, more than story for me, because it felt a lot more stealth-oriented, which I really liked. You could mix things up. You could skulk across ice. You could, like... ambush enemy soldiers from behind and take them down with a couple of hits. It was well done. It was well thought out. And each section felt more like a puzzle more than, you know, an out-and-out run-and-gun sequence, even though you could play it that way. I had a lot of fun playing it as a proper stealth game. And that even extended to the boss fights. So towards the end, you could essentially like stealth up the entire thing, which I thought was really cool. The implementation of stealth was good. And if I compare it to the first game, which is, you know, as they call 2013's Tomb Raider, had a lot more run and gun, And I think a lot of it also had to do with the way the story was shaped. Because 2013's Tomb Raider was Lara on her first expedition. And her first contact with the occult and the cool stuff that happens over there. I think in a way it's like the plot, it's like the narrative and the gameplay kind of go hand in hand with the series, which is very rare. It's not something you see too often. And it's done quite well. So, yeah, I mean, looking forward to what they do with Shadow. But before we get to that, Mike, take it away on what you get when you give Square Enix more money.
So, on the physical side of things, as of now in India, as of this recording, only standard editions are up for pre-order. And those are 3999 on both PS4 and Xbox One and 2999 on PC. So, it's actually 500 rupees less to pay for... to buy it physically than it is to buy it on Steam. It will come with a Steam code, but there's a caveat over here. Square Enix is known to sometimes require you to use the disc in your disc drive if you have one and redeem a code and connect online to their servers to generate a Steam code. They've done this with Life is Strange, both versions of Life is Strange. Thankfully, Final Fantasy 15 Windows Edition just came with a Steam code, so we don't know what they're going to pull with this one. Now, other than that... there's the Croft Edition, which is basically the equivalent of an Ultimate Edition without any goodies, physical goodies, which has 48 hours early access. It has a skill booster pack. It has a soundtrack. It has additional weapon and outfit packs. It also has the Season Pass, which is quite funny on its own because the Season Pass, as they've advertised it, a new adventure every month, 7 challenge tombs with narrative side missions. So basically, you need to pay extra to get not one, not two, but 7 tombs to raid in a Tomb Raider game. And it'll also give you 7 weapons, 7 outfits, and 7 skills. They don't classify what these skills are or whatever, but if you get all of this in the beginning, then they've basically just broken the difficulty of the game. If you get 7 skills right from the get-go, it's a little funny that they're pulling this, but yeah, that's the thing. In the UK, which is what most likely will come to India, there's also a Steelbook edition which has the base game, some art cards, 1 weapon pack, and the game itself. There's also a Croft edition with a Steelbook, which has everything I mentioned for the Croft edition, except it has a Steelbook and art cards as well. These editions are quite expensive compared to standard edition. You can get the Ultimate Physical Edition, which hopefully will show up over here considering the previous PS4 edition showed up here, which has everything the Croft edition has, an actual physical bottle opener, an actual physical flashlight, a statue which shows Lara Croft with her machete entering a tomb apparently, and it has the original game soundtrack and more weapons and more outfits. While we haven't actually seen what the final statue looks like, hopefully it looks better than the Rise of the Tomb Raider one, which looked almost as bad as the Witcher 3 Collector's Edition statue when it comes to the face quality. So... these are the physical editions which are announced for European territories, which is what India comes under. What will release here officially remains to be seen at this point, but expect more than just the standard edition.
Yeah, now just to clarify a bit, what we do know so far, as of the recording of this podcast, there's a very strong chance that the Ultimate Edition may not come here at all. We've been hearing that the possibility of the Ultimate Edition being restricted to possibly just unboxing videos and promotional activities than an actual release. And that has to do with the fact that that the Ultimate Edition in other regions is restricted to Square Enix store exclusive. And when that usually tends to happen, it doesn't get wider availability outside of that. So we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. Second thing to keep in mind is there's a good chance that despite the game rumored to have a marketing deal with Microsoft, even if that is the case, don't expect, it's safe to say, given the current climate of the Xbox One in India, it's something which we discussed at length in a previous podcast, I'm sure Pranay will link it in the show notes, it's safe to say that if you're an Xbox fan, don't expect anything more than a standard edition here. If the other SKUs, such as the Deluxe Edition and the Croft Edition show up, great, but then I wouldn't keep my hopes up. And even if they do show up, expect stock to be extremely limited. So that's another thing to keep in mind.
If you like buying Xbox One games physically, like from third-party publishers like Square Enix, Warner and all, you might want to always pre-order the game because usually minimum quantity comes in, so stuff might sell out, because like Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen, it actually sold out in pre-orders only, except for a few online retailers that had stock. So if you're sure you want it, don't wait until release to like go to a store. You might want to just pre-order it, because with Xbox One in India, you can never be sure you're going to get something on day one unless they get extra. And given how certain releases like Deus Ex Mankind Divided have burnt distributors and online stores in terms of how much they've brought in, I wouldn't expect much for the new Tomb Raider game. So if you want it on Xbox, pre-order it. This is one of the rare situations where we'd say pre-order a standard edition of a game also, because you might get forced into buying it digitally or looking at gray market alternatives.
Yeah, and speaking of Xbox, there's also a very strong rumor at this point of time, at the time of recording this podcast, that the game will be available on Xbox Game Pass day one. Allegedly, the reason for this is instead of Microsoft paying for exclusivity, they figure they might as well just money hat the fact that the game could be available on Game Pass. Now, what this effectively means is you might see a large day one number of people playing it on Xbox, but will they continue playing it a month or two after release? We don't know. And the other thing also to keep in mind is, while certain quote-unquote analysts claim that Game Pass isn't hurting retail sales, that's a very short-term myopic view, because we aren't sure of the impact just yet. We'll only know the impact of the subscription service on actual retail sales a year down the line, at least. All that being said, what that basically means for a consumer is, if you're the sort who just wants to play Shadow of the Tomb Raider on the cheap and you have Game Pass, you might just be in luck. But for the rest of us who actually prefer some form of ownership, as Mike said, those are your options day one. That aside, there is also another point of interest about the game, wherein it's actually been developed by Eidos Montreal. The last two games were made by Crystal Dynamics, which is who've been making the Tomb Raider games since their inception. But since they're working on the new Avengers titles, it seems that the baton has been passed on to Eidos Montreal. So if you're wondering if it's just a completely new team working on it, that's not the case. We did a quick check before recording, and at least the creative director and the people in charge of level design worked on Rise of the Tomb Raider. So you know you're in good hands in terms of what to expect. And while the previews have been super erratic, we've had certain sites claim it to be the game of the generation, which is amusing because all they did was play 30 minutes of it. And while others claiming it to be a fairly linear run-of-the-mill adventure, it seems to be all over the place. So hopefully at E3 we'll probably get more information, and that'll actually give us an idea of what you can exactly expect when it hits.
Cool then. So is there anything else you guys want to talk about, like the relevance of Lara Croft, for example?
Well, honestly, it's an interesting situation to be in, right? Because we're in a post-Uncharted world. We're in a post-Uncharted Lost Legacy world, where you ended up playing as Chloe Fraser and Nadine Ross. And that game was really good. I mean, it was a $40 expansion, but it was every bit as good as most mainline Uncharted games. So, I mean, there is competition. Where I think the strengths of the franchise, at least with this recent reincarnation, have been in terms of storytelling and have been in character development. We've seen a naive explorer turn into
you know, Nathan Drake.
Yeah, I mean, I would say a badass hunter, but okay,
I would say
fine.
Natalie Drake, maybe.
There we go. I mean, yeah, they've been pretty good with the character development and storytelling so far. Particularly with the overarching plot that she's after Trinity, the shadowy, sinister organization that is responsible for the death of her father. And the fact that they're playing up that plot angle for the third game makes it really interesting. And at least gives those of us who've been playing the games from there, at least gives those of us who've been playing the game since the beginning some sort of narrative payoff. Hey, you've played the first game, you play the second game, you're going to see some cool narrative payoff with the third game. You're going to see a conclusion to all the cool stuff in the third game. So, yeah, I mean, personally interested to see how this works out. And I still think, yeah, she's relevant, because we don't have too many strong personalities in gaming this generation. We've had Nathan Drake. We've had Kratos. But then...
Aloy.
We've had Aloy. from Horizon Zero Dawn. But then that aside from these, if you look at gaming this generation, it's been punctuated by open worlds, live services, microtransactions, and season passes.
And it looks like we're going to get all of those in one nice package called Shadow of the Tomb Raider Croft Edition, exclusive to Microsoft Game Pass.
But we also get a strong lead character, which is, you know, not exactly been the highlight of this generation. So, yeah, I still think she's relevant.
Yeah, well, but I mean, Sony has been like the exception to this, right? They've released a ton of first-party titles, which all of which are like very good single-player games with very little whatever nonsense online microtransaction components.
Well, they did do, at least at launch, it was a little bare bones, but they've supported it really well. Gran Turismo Sport, which I think all of us can agree on is one of the best racing games of the generation, and that's basically games as a service.
Yeah, but I think it's a question of, see, with Sony, again, for them, the metrics are a little different. They don't have to worry too much about breaking even on a first party title, because the job of the first party title is to sell the hardware. So by that, and let's be honest, if the logic was to just sell them standalone, we wouldn't be having hardware bundles for every first party title. I mean, God of War at launch had multiple hardware bundles where you buy the PS4 and get the game free. So obviously for them, the metrics are different. But at the same time, yeah, I agree completely. The quality of content cannot be compared. I mean, the only thing that comes close is Nintendo. And Nintendo has been in its own league, because Nintendo lives in this weird, wacky world where good games exist on a regular basis.
Yep, then. So I think that's all we have for this episode, apart from the games we've been playing this week. So I think I'll go first. I've been playing Nier Automata, which is a Square Enix game, funnily enough. That's the whole episode has been dedicated to them, I guess. So
yeah, the good games.
Yeah.
So, now we're reaching the good games part.
Yeah, so the Nier Automata thing, what I did was, first I finished the game as the main character, which is 2B. Then the partner of 2B, which is 9S, you get to play as 9S in the second playthrough. So that reveals the story. It's pretty much the same, but with a whole bunch of other story elements that reveal themselves. And the gameplay differs because 9S is a scanner unit. So you hack a lot of other machines, and previously chests, which you couldn't open earlier, they can now be opened via hacking. This playthrough has been fun for many reasons. I enjoy this hacking mechanism much more than the actual shooting one. So what happens in the hacking thing is, you just press the triangle thing and the circle completes, then you go into this hacking space where you are a triangular blob which shoots lasers, and there are a whole bunch of other enemies there. So some enemies will be really simple to hack. You'll just see a circular thing, you attack that, you destroy it, and you hack the enemy. But other enemies will have a full proper attack barrier with some 15-16 soldiers, and some of which pop up later. So you have to destroy all of them, and then finally you get to the main orb and you can destroy that, and then you hack them. So I enjoy the hacking part of it. That made the gameplay much simpler for me. Because in the shooting aspect, when I was playing as 2B, the whole hack slash and then shoot and all that was getting to me a lot. I'm not very good at that. But the hacking aspect, I really enjoyed. And in this, the way they freshened up the gameplay in the second playthrough is that they show you random story elements from the machine's side of the story. Basically, the game story is androids versus machines. So in the first playthrough, it's all Righteous Fury and all that nonsense. But in the second playthrough, you realize that the story is it's not all black and white. It's there are lots of shades of gray, and the android side may not be as righteous and good as they claim to be in the first playthrough. And this also shows, because 2B is the character is written in such a way that it's an unquestioning soldier, right? The commander has given an order, I'll follow it without really thinking about it. Then 9S is shown to be a character who talks a lot, who's a more emotional character, and then thinks a lot about how things are panning out. And somehow in the 9S playthrough, you get to see a lot of visions from the machine's history. And particularly that it hit me in the Forest Kingdom section, where what you do in the first playthrough, you just go there, you destroy all machines, and then you finish the level. But in the second playthrough, you get to see what happened like 256 years ago, one machine decided, okay, this forest is like really punishing and we haven't heard anything from our creators, so let's just create our own kingdom. And then like there is another cutscene a few minutes later which says 128 years ago, that machine dies, and then they appoint a successor, which is like a baby machine, like a really tiny machine, underdeveloped one. And then there is a final cutscene which says 4 hours ago, and then it shows the same baby machine, and like those other machines are discussing that the king's successor hasn't grown a bit. Because obviously these machines don't grow, right? They have to sort of either add parts to themselves and build themselves from scratch, or like they will not grow like humans do biologically. So that sort of gives more of an insight into the machines, like life and motivations and all. And I really like that. So now I'm nearing the ending of that second playthrough, which is type B playthrough. And now there's like C, D and E, which is like apparently quite short and will arrive very soon. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm really hooked to the story. I'm glad I picked up this game. And, you know, I'm also once again going to like openly thank Platinum Games for making it really accessible in the easiest difficulty mode. Because if the difficulty was more punishing, I probably would have left it halfway through, because I'm really not that good at shooting and, you know, this hack and slash type of combat. It's much easier for me to play this game simply because of that reduced motion sickness option. And because of the auto shooting thing. So because of that, I could finish the first playthrough, and the second one, I just hack everyone and everything so that, you know, I have to avoid that hack and slash combat. So now looking forward to what happens here and yeah, to finishing the story. So I think that's the only game I played this week. What about you guys?
So I've been playing Cosmic Star Heroine on the Vita. It released last week. It actually was a Kickstarter project which released originally on PS4 and Steam. It's supposed to come to, I don't know if it's going to come to Switch, but it's supposed to come to Mac and Xbox One soon. The developers have been pretty vocal about how it's been working with Unity for the Vita, and it's been interesting to see, because while a lot of developers who even promised Kickstarter goals of a Vita port dropped it because of quote-unquote engine issues, or just like obviously it won't make as much money as other platforms, Zeboid Games persevered through it and released something which is really good. So like obviously this game is basically like a lot of traditional 16-bit JRPGs put together with some modern conveniences. So instead of playing other games like Setsuna and Lost Fear, this is like a proper game if you like Chrono Trigger and all. And the Vita port is really good. Been playing this, already played it on PS4, so just playing this for the Vita port. Been also playing Hearthstone, the new single player content for the expansion called Monster Hunt Release, which is kind of similar to Dungeon Run except with different classes, different cards and different in-game mechanics. So been playing that. It's a little harder than Dungeon Run, so that's been fun. And other than that, just been playing random God of War stuff, trying to like play in a few hours every day and all. Apparently I'm now getting closer to 2/3 of the way through. It's really good. Discovered some like doing some side stuff and all really rewards you when you find either like, you know, relics or stuff, which, and I like how the game just tells you, just sell this serves no other purpose on your journey, while other games you'd like think, should I sell this, will it be useful later? So it's really good. Also upgraded the axe, where now every hit or every kill gets you health burst back, which has made it really fun. So yeah, basically just been doing that. We'll probably get back to Overwatch at some point, and a big update hit for Gran Turismo Sport, so looking forward to checking that out.
Well, yeah, so I've been playing this game called Summer Carnival 92 Rekka, which is basically an eShop release, and where it's an eShop release on the Nintendo 3DS. It's basically a shooter from the NES Famicom era. And it's notorious for super hard difficulty, and it's blisteringly fast to play. So we've been playing a lot of that and dying quite often, playing the time attack mode, normal mode, been playing a lot of that. It's quite cool. I mean, the music still holds up, the sprites surprisingly hold up on the 3DS. So we've been playing that. Been playing Chrono Trigger as well, and simply rerunning through the game. So yeah, that's been fun to see how that's going on a playthrough just for fun. And aside from those two, been playing Total War Thrones of Britannia, Total War Saga Thrones of Britannia, which is kind of like a more immediate version of the Total War games, because while previous Total War games had you commanding a large areas, kingdoms over a massive historical era, here you're in charge during pivotal historical moments. So the game gives you like a bunch of cool options every now and then called dilemmas. So what happens is, like, so for example, your kingdom could be under siege from the Vikings. You could decide to take him head on, or just pay them off to go away. And you have options like that, which is pretty cool. So and that does tend to make for a different experience. You can even, like, get your generals married to women from other kingdom in order to maintain peace treaties with your with vassal states.
So Game of Thrones.
Pretty much. So it's pretty cool. It's essentially like politics and drama and backstabbery. And it plays quite well. It scales quite well too. It ran really well on our test rig, which had a 1070 and an i5. It also ran really well on a laptop with an integrated Intel GPU. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. And it's relatively cheap on Steam too. I think 1335 is the MRP.
Yeah, for a change, you picked a game that we'd normally assume Mike would pick up.
Oh, Summer 92 Rekka, or Chrono Trigger, or Total War.
Well, not Total War, the first two.
I am playing Total War though, but like...
So, yeah, basically that, playing those.
Yeah.
Hopefully next week I'll be back to the usual diet of Overwatch.
Yeah. Alright then, I guess that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening.